Last time, a new traveler Aditi and her panther companion Bhailu joined the Musafirs and the merchant caravan as they set out for their long trip across the continent. As the day progressed, they dealt with bull tales, child wails, and creepy tales of Rakshasas and mountains. As the sun sets on their first day, what awaits them next? You're listening to The Musafirs. Starring Ajay Pandey as Anika.
The only thing I've used up is the goodwill of my companion.
Amar Amaraz as Adhuri.
And why is everyone looking at me?
Jabari Weathers as Adila.
I'm gonna just like stand up and like waddle over with it.
Leona Maple as Aditi.
Oh no! And she'll kind of glare at Bailey and she'll go, "What? It's not that bad."
And Mariam Ahmed as the GM. Hi, you're listening to The Musafirs, a decolonized actual play podcast featuring an all-queer BIMPOC cast. The B's for Black, I's for Indigenous, M for Mixed, and POC for People of Color. I just wanted to take this time to first of all wish everyone a belated Eid Mubarak, as well as a very happy Pride Month. Celebrate who you are, and we will be proud for you if you're unable to. You are loved, you're valid, you matter, and we see you. And remember, Pride was a riot. We are also happy to announce that The Musafirs is now part of Welcome to the Party podcast channel on Podbean. Welcome to the Party is dedicated to creating an inclusive and equitable gaming community where folks can come and learn how to stream or play games on stream, and then give them the place to do it. If you would like to support us and Welcome to the Party, join their Patreon. You'll get interviews with players, mods, and DMs, behind-the-scenes looks at games from art to notes, and you'll help underwrite amazing writers, artists, and creators from across the gaming verse and help create a place to showcase their amazing work. Their Patreon link can be found in the show notes. It's almost close to sunset. You've now moved away from farmlands and started now being on a main road going through some forested area. You can see the forest line, which is several hundred feet away, and they mentioned that they'll be going through that at dawn's first light the next day. Let's just say for cardinal points, you are going east to west, and you are about several hundred feet east of what seems to be a forest that is covering up most of your western horizon view. And then about 1 or 2 kilometers north of you, but not in the forest, there seems to be what looks to be an old haveli, like a mansion of some kind, and what looks to be a temple and a lake. And you notice that the caravan is not going next to the lake or the what looks to be the abandoned mansion and temple. They are actually settling at a well-known traveler's clearing, and they all stop there as dusk approaches. And they say that they will make camp here, and everyone's basically free to do what they want as long as they don't wander too far. The forest it can be easy to get lost in the forest at night, but if they stay here, they should have a good vantage point of any creatures. And as far as they know, most wild creatures don't like being near campfires.
I am immediately trying to redeem my earlier performance with some welcoming tones as we set camp after I finish assisting various people with their setups.
Annika wants to immediately set up like watch orders for the night. Actually, who's taking what watch? I can take first watch. Or any watch, really.
I'll be up a while. I could take second.
Who wants third?
Could I have first watch, please?
Sure, I'll take third.
Thank you.
Who's an early riser?
Hey. And why is everyone looking at me?
Someone's gonna take watch.
I just want to know if I'm playing these notes correctly.
No.
Oh, well, I was going to be more polite, but slight adjustment on.
Can I make another perform check?
Of course. Definitely make a performance check.
It's a whole 10.
Oh. Slightly better, but you are right next to a forest. There's an abandoned ruins further up ahead, and then there's mountains also in the vistas.
It's so goth.
Okay, it is. Can I even roll a perform check or just help out?
If you aid, then Adela gets advantage.
Okay, yeah, I'm basically just going to be, like, continuing, like, pointing out stuff. It's like, please tune that string right there, please.
Okay, roll again and take the better result.
Ooh, 19.
Describe to me how you each work together to make it not so chilling as previously.
I think I fall into a tuning that's actually, like, pleasantly discordant, and I lean into,
yeah,
like, the weird... and essentially, like, figure out, like, the Sir Singar equivalent of, like, playing a guitar in drop D. so I'm actually, like, leaning full into, like, the, like, weird morbid persona. But then I kind of, like, leave enough open space for Adhuri to kind of spin some spookier tales, if they so please.
Yeah, I think once... I imagine that while you're tuning it, there's a slight window between when it gets that pleasant discordant and when it's just flat out discordant. But once you settle into that lull, Adhuri will gladly do that and ignore the question of the watch entertaining people over dinner.
Excellent. Also, for the few naysayers that are around camp, I kind of just point out that some people who have maybe, like, wandered out further to, like, you know, go and, like, gather their own supplies and things for the road, or just, like, you know, figure out, like, what the safe bounds are for camp, where they might have had a problem, like, finding their way back, this spooky-ass song helped, so don't complain about it.
No response from a particular naysayer.
And I think at one point, even I pull up my sarangi and accompany, like, your discordant tune with a melody that's just, like, soft and ominous and adds some more atmosphere.
I approve.
Ankh is interested in the mansion and temple out in the corner. I would like to roll either history, arcana, or religion, whichever is more pertinent, to figure out the story there.
History.
I rolled a 14.
The most you get from the temple is that it is some sort of a temple venerating a water deity. And since it is out facing a lake, it makes sense. But it's really out of Koldak, and it's been a while, and you're having trouble trying to remember exactly. It's not quite, there's something that you're not quite able to put your finger on.
That's going to haunt her for the night.
Yeah, you imagine if something that stately has been abandoned, that there's two reasons. Either something forced them to move, or the family is no more and there was no one to claim it, and it's just too out of the way for someone to manage it.
She hopes it's the second one.
But yeah, that's not knowing exactly what's going on there. It's gonna nag at her for the rest of the night.
As a morbid tune drifts through the air.
Hey, play something else, could ya?
I just look at the probably the children who are, like, kind of enthralled by the, like, spook and continue to play. Not having the context of your inner thoughts, which are very valid.
What is Aditi doing?
I think because this is Aditi's first time out on the road, she wants to stay close by. Yes, there's some interesting things nearby, but she would rather help the travelers in any way possible, whether it's, you know, tending to the children and keeping them busy with Bailu for a little bit while, you know, the parents are setting up camp or cooking food or whatever. Or, you know, it's just keeping an eye out on their surroundings and stuff like that. She's kind of being very quiet and reserved and just kind of helping wherever possible.
Most of the merchants are essentially setting up mini campfires as they are beginning to make food that they will eat on the road. You notice them taking out a small amount of what looks to be milled flour of some kind, and they have them in basically little rations, essentially, to be like, okay, we're going to make this much for now. They take some of their water skins and mix the flour to make some sort of a bread that they can stick on what looks to be a flat piece of cast iron. It's almost like a bowl. They invert the bowl upside down and then put the bread on top of it. They're basically making roti, except it's not wheat. It's actually made out of millet. It's made out of non-wheat grains. And you notice them taking out something very spicy that you all know is achar, which is a pickle. Taking a small amount of it out and taking a couple of raw onions and cutting it into slices and essentially having a meal with the bread, the pickle, and the onion. Rolling it up for easier eating.
Did you mention what kind of pickle it was?
It looks like it's mango.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Delicious.
Oh, yes.
Mango pickles, my jam.
Oh, I love mango pickles. And they were made shortly after the harvest season. So they're very vibrant and fresh and oily and delicious. The oil is what preserves it. So there's a lot of it, but people, you notice that they're very careful and not eating the oil or taking too much of the oil as they take a little bit out of the pot and then seal it tightly again.
Oh, Attila's playing slips kind of notably as the food gets broke out.
So, interestingly enough, it's at this point that Aditi realizes that she's not terribly experienced with cooking. She did a little bit during her time in Bunga, but she's feeling a little nervous about being out on the road and realizing that she maybe was a little naive and a little underprepared. So she actually will approach Sunera because they're the ones with the kids and she's the family she's the most familiar with. And she's going to sit next to Sunera and she's going to help her cook, essentially, by way of learning. So she's observing what Sunera is doing and she's mimicking it and she's, you know, chatting along with her to try and not only, you know, learn what she's doing, but also to hopefully contribute a little and help cook her own food and her own meals so that she has something for tonight and for the next day.
You actually notice that tonight, instead of Sunera doing the cooking, Thezula, the human man, is. They seem to both be good at cooking on the road, and it seems like they take turns between. So Sunera is with the kids at the moment.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, she'll happily sit with Thezula and she'll, you know, learn from him.
Are you going to try to make roti?
Yes, absolutely.
I will say, just so that you knead it properly and everything, let's make it a dexterity check. So you would add a d20 and add your dexterity modifier to it.
I'm going to just, like, stand up with the Sursingar and, like, waddle over with it a little awkwardly with this heavy instrument and kind of, I'm going to assist, even though it's a little bit in an unwelcome way, like, cutting through the tune that I'm kind of plucking away at is the occasional, like, oh no, you're going to want to treat... You're going to want to treat this that way. Be careful with the flour.
So are you aiding her?
I am.
Okay, so then you can roll with advantage. So you roll the d20 twice and take the better roll.
I'm careful not to touch their ingredients because I haven't been invited to do that, but I'm like backseat driving. It's simultaneously obnoxious and hopefully helpful.
But she's not too sure how Adila notices that she does need the help, but she's very, very grateful and she kind of shoots her, you know, a sort of like a thank you look. Unfortunately, my dice did not appreciate it.
I
rolled an... So the better roll was a 9, plus my dexterity modifier is 2, so 9, 10, 11.
That is just enough to be able to knead them to a consistency where they don't turn into throwing stars.
Oh my god.
Just wide chips.
She would have just, like, died of embarrassment.
Well, you managed to knead it to a proper consistency. I'm going to say make another dexterity check. So same thing. And I'll say with Adila sort of backseat driving, you get advantage again. And this is to see whether you can roll them out consistently.
Also, she definitely didn't notice that you needed help until you gave her the up close I need help look. It was more she's just excited about cooking.
Well, she let that slip. Oh, you're kidding me. Oh no. So that's a 3.
Okay, so the final result, I will say, is they would have been soft had they been rolled out consistently, and they are. But as you bite into a couple of them, you realize they're a little raw as they've been unevenly rolled out.
Oh.
I just wince. I've stopped playing.
She'll take some of the ones that are okay and kind of shred them up and just kind of make a little something for Bailu as well, some things that he can kind of munch on for the evening.
As you give one or two to Bailu.
Poor Bailu.
Oh, Bailu kind of goes chomp, chomp, and then bleh, just like hairballs it back up.
Oh no. And she'll kind of glare at Bailu and she'll go, "What? It's not that bad. Stop it. Shh, stop it. Don't do that. Stop it. It's not that bad." And of course, Bailu disagrees.
And just continuously licks it and throws it back up.
Okay, fine then, Bailu. You can go into the forest and find something else to eat. And she'll kind of pout a little bit.
And Bailu slinks away and disappears for an hour or two.
Annika comes up and says, "I'll take them."
Sure, here you go. And she'll hand them to Annika.
Thanks. And she just kind of eats them herself. Adventure life, you know, you get used to crap food.
Do you say that?
No, I don't think she says it.
I think he's just not even going to judge. I think he's just like, just glad that someone's eating it and that it's coming in.
Thank you for releasing me.
Thank you for saving my honor.
Saving face.
Saving face for sure.
Okay, so after bread has been made and you all are settling in for the night, you see Goody and Bubbly, the two children, fall into each parent's lap, and they say, "Chanda mama, chanda mama." And you see the halfling man sort of turn and say, "What is it, Beti?" They say, tell us that story, the Bakra story. And Fakir Chan sits down and says, "Well, once upon a time, there were two Rakshasas named Bali and Bakra." And now the children are just like wide-eyed, like listening to something that they've heard probably a million times. "There were two Rakshasas named Bali and Bakra who terrorized everybody." And as he's like sitting up to them, he kind of just tickles them in their tummy, like sort of like terrorizing them. And they're just giggling. And he continues, "They were in fact so carnivorous that all they wanted to eat is humanoids like us and like Goody and Bubbly." And they're just like giggling. They're enjoying the crap out of it. They've heard this so many times. "They used to kill them and cook them and eat them. But how could they get a new one every day? So these brothers, Bali and Bakra, they hatched out a plan. They pretended to be very humble sages. And every day they would invite a poor innocent sage for lunch. The younger brother, Bakra, he was a master in magic. He would allow himself to be cut into pieces and be cooked. But he had the power to gain his life afterwards, so it was okay if they cut him into little pieces. So the elder brother, Bali, he would cut and cook his younger brother and feed it to the invited guest, who would not know what he had eaten. And after the eating was over, Bali would call out for his younger brother saying, 'Oh, Bakra, please come.' And then those Rakshasas, through the power of magic, would regain life and burst the stomach of the poor sage they invited. And then that would be their meal. And every day this would happen. Most of the sages in this land were finished one by one. Until one day, it so happened they had a very bad bargain. And that bad bargain was when they invited the sage named Maharishi over. And at this point, the children are giggling. He was invited for lunch. He was not an ordinary sage as the two brothers thought he was. As usual, Bakura was cooked again and given to Rishi for lunch. Rishi knew what was happening and ate it. And as soon as he finished his meal, Bali said, "Oh, Bakura, please come." But then Rishi the sage, he rubbed his belly, muttering, "Let Bakura be digested," and then turned to the elder brother and said, "Your brother has been digested. He cannot come out, and he will not come out." Oh, the elder brother was so shocked. He thought there was some special power with the sage, and he ran for his life. But Rishi would not let him escape. Before Fakir-chan could even finish, Goody says, "But what happened? Tell me, tell me!" And Fakir-chan says, "Well, I don't know." And then he very sort of conspicuously whispers, "But they say that the Maharishi sealed the brothers away, making sure they could never eat another person again." And you hear the little kids clapping, and they're like, "Yee, nice story, another one, another one!"
Ominous, disquieting notes.
What is everybody doing after that fireside story was told, as everybody's now getting ready for bed?
I think Annika is probably asleep by then. But she sleeps in her armor.
Adhila is going to go observe Annika sleeping, just trying to, like...
Because that's not creepy at all.
Yeah, I know, that sounded really weird. She realizes that it's strange, but, like, she walks over, like she's not planning on doing this, but she's just so struck by, like, this choice of, like, wow, how guarded of a person are you? That, like, she walks over for, like, a minute or two and is just, like... Like, she has this confused look on her face. When she walks back over to, like, the nearest campfire and, like, starts reflecting on everything, like, in writing. And like, reflecting on kind of the uneasy feeling that she's been carrying around from, like, this layer of armor that Annika is, like, walking around with.
Annika, are you asleep and unknowing to all of this happening, or are you sort of still awake and notice this?
Out cold.
At this point in the night, I am still probably doing my nightly routine of taking notes in my journal of everything we saw on the road, things that I observed that would be interesting. And then once I've gotten all those quick observations and notes done, I start writing out the story that was told to the kids, as well as the stories that I was told this morning by Guru Guru.
Okay, so I believe Aditi said she'd take first watch.
Oh, yes, actually.
Okay, I would like you to give me a perception check.
13.
So Aditi, after about an hour or two, you see Bailu sort of slinking by with the smell of fresh meat in their teeth. Probably some small game of some kind. You don't see any of it, you just can smell it. Bailu got fed.
That's fine.
Comes up and sort of rubs his face against your leg or sort of your arm if you're sitting down. Just to let you know, I'm here.
Yep, that's perfect. And she'll pat the ground next to her and make sure that Bailu sits with her. So that way there's the two of them on watch.
If you want Bailu to keep watch, then you can certainly also roll for Bailu as well.
It's 5.
Bailu's probably digesting off and sort of lazing just a little. And you notice several times their eyes are closed.
She'll kind of nudge him. Just be like, "Hey, we have to stay up. We'll sleep together afterwards. Like, just keep me company for now, right?" She'll keep nudging him awake. And Bailu has none of it.
And Bailu starts purring.
Aww.
This is good. Let me sleep.
I want that cat.
Your watch goes by fairly uneventfully. Who is the next person to keep watch?
I think that's Jabari.
Yes, indeed. That's Adhila. So yeah, I go off a little ways and start, like, walking the perimeter of the camp.
Give me your perception check.
That is a 12.
Your watch goes by uneventfully. Nothing of note. And who is the next person to keep watch?
This gal.
All right. You're awoken by Adila.
There's a hesitation. I'm a little, like, worried about getting cut down or something.
Go to bed.
I do.
And she just gets up and, like, takes watch.
All right. Roll me your perception check, please.
16.
So about half hour, maybe an hour in, it's still very dark at night. You see a speck of light across the lake, like a very small pinprick of light. And at first, maybe you thought it might have been the moonlight, and then you notice it's actually not a very moonlit night. And as your eyes sort of focus, you notice that the little pinprick of light is almost rising from the depths of the lake and now is actually broke the water surface. And there's like some sort of, maybe there's a figure or something you can't quite see. And the light looks to maybe be like 4 or 5 feet off the surface, like on the head of some creature. And sort of making its way towards the temple. It's about still like a kilometer away. Like, it would take you about 10 minutes to get there.
Yeah. She's not about to chase after it, but she's going to keep note of that.
You see that maybe for about another half hour, 45 minutes, close to an hour maybe, the light sort of is there as the sun is slowly starting to rise. Like, there's just small rays of light coming from the mountains showing that dawn is about to break. You notice that light, that moving light, start to go back into the water again and then winks out.
What check would I have to make to recognize what that is?
I am going to say Arcana.
Arcana. Lucky for me, I took basically every knowledge skill I could get for a fighter. 14. No, 16.
So you have heard of Nagas and sort of jewel-crested serpents that have a magical stone as part of their jewel crest. And those are highly sought after by mages for their powers. And they're called, the stone itself is called Manix or Manikyas.
She's gonna keep that in mind.
If you enjoyed listening to our show and want to follow us on social media, check out our Facebook, Twitter, and Discord links within the show notes. You can also subscribe to this podcast on our website, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Cast, and all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to leave a rating or review for us. We appreciate all the feedback, and it helps makes us more visible. Thank you, and goodbye.